recording.
Tonight we're going to talk about brightening the mind. The mind is, the human brain is set up for one reason only. And that's not to mirror accurately the world around us, nor is it set up to bring us lasting happiness. The human mind is an organ of survival. It's set up not to accurately reflect the world, but to emphasize the dangers, threats, difficulties that we've had before, and then B, also to highlight opportunities and sources of ease, for instance, food, shelter, etc. So it distorts. And the human mind actually distorts far more towards the negative than the positive. In psychology, they call this negativity bias. What it means is that we have a tendency to recall the negative experiences of life. Why is that? Well, the negative experiences are the ones that directly most threaten our survival and the view of the mind. So it prioritizes storing all of the sensations that occur during what we consider to be a negative, frightening, scary, difficult, challenging encounter. 2/3 of the mind's limbic system is devoted to searching out, noting, and storing negative experiences. Only 1/3 is set aside for positive experiences. It takes no time whatsoever for a negative experience to be stored for long-term memory in the temporal lobe. A negative experience. It's instantaneous. On the other hand, a positive experience takes between 12 and 20 seconds for it to have any chance of being stored for recall. Now, this is important. We all live in, before we train the brains, we live in very jumpy minds. Minds that jump around looking for things that are threatening, looking for things that are opportunistic. We don't settle on or focus on much for very long periods of time. And so if it takes good, positive, happy memories 20 seconds to be stored, but negative memories, negative events, absolutely no time. Which kind of memories do you think you're regularly storing in the brain? The answer is negative, by the way. The negative memories that we store when we're stressed out, when the heart's racing, when we're breathing with bated breath, when there's the presence of cortisol, become what's known as implicit memories. They're not even totally conscious. They prime our behavior. They can create panic attacks, create bad moods. The reason is that when we experience a negative situation, a circumstance, somebody's judging us, somebody's being verbally abusive with us, something's not going our way, we're frustrated, we're angry, we're upset, we're deeply, deeply disappointed, and there's the presence of physical stress. The brain releases cortisol. It recalls everything, not just the event. It also recalls how you feel, what mood you're in, what thoughts are going through your mind, what body sensations are present. It doesn't recall fluid movement. It just recalls all these body states, moods, images, sensations. And so in the rest of your life, when you wind up in a similar situation, you're stressed out, and you have the same thought or the same impression or tightness in the belly or locking of the jaw or tightness in the shoulder, any of these events can trigger the old mood to take you over. You can be, for example, you're going, for instance, through a traumatic breakup that's very, very sad. And it's happening while you're eating pizza. And so you recall the smell of the pizza, you recall the feeling in the body of being caught off guard and being suddenly shocked, you recall the words and the look of rejection in your partner's face. And later on, when you're stressed out walking down the street, you might smell pizza, and guess what? It'll trigger a bad, bad mood. And then, on top of this implicit association, we have what's known as mood congruence. Mood congruence is one of the most interesting and now fervently studied tendencies of the mind. What mood congruence is, quite simply, when you're in a bad mood, you are more likely to recall bad, fucked up situations from your past. When you're in a good mood, you're more likely to recall good things. The brain does not play devil's advocate. The brain is an associative machine. The brain doesn't want you to be level-headed or balanced. When you're really fucked up and smelling the shit of life, it wants you to know every other shitty event that you've been through. Why, oh why, does the brain do this? Because it thinks it's in your interest for survival. It thinks that when you're going through something bad, you should be reminded of all the other bad things that have happened so that you'll be protected and you'll be on guard. It wants you to get into a state of alarm. It's not interested in your long-term happiness, the brain. The brain is interested in you surviving today so that you can fuck and procreate. That's what you've been set up for. So if we're going to introduce lasting peace of mind, we've got to basically do a whole system update of the brain. Like when you get a computer and it's already, you open it up and it wants to redo its complete operating system because it's already old. I'm a nerd. Just work with me. We're each born with an operating system that's tens of thousands of years out of date. Your brain is set up to survive in the most detrimental, inhospitable circumstances when the human species was not the dominant species, where death was everywhere. And that's how the brain is set up, to keep us alive another day. It hasn't caught up with the fact that we've become the dominant species on the planet. None of us is going to be attacked by a wild boar on our way back home. Statistically, you're not. So it's out of date. Now, on top of all this negative bias that's neurally conditioned by the mind, there's also psychological tendencies that further this negativity bias. News programs do a lot of studies on what keeps people staying with their program. I'm going to give you two leads, and you're going to play the producer of the TV news. I'll tell you what the two possible leads are. The first is shark attack in remote beach in Australia. The second news lead is city council debates infrastructure improvements. What do you think that you would be choosing? The problem is that while the shark attack story will keep us all focused, it actually doesn't affect any of our lives whatsoever. On the other hand, the story where there's no blood, fear, destruction, death, maiming, the infrastructure, that's going to affect all of your lives. But most people wouldn't even bother to watch it because we look for the negative. There's an interesting study where they asked people what they were more likely to believe, negative statements or positive. Negative one by 3-1. Why is that? Because people believe that in life we're all pressured to being positive, that there's a social pressure that we place on ourselves to be upbeat. So when people say to us, when you ask somebody, you see, you're like, oh, how's it going at home? And they say, wonderful. You only give them so much credibility. But if you see, Joe, Jay, hey Joe, how's it going? What's going on? Miserable, everything, shit. It's all fucked. You're more likely to believe them. They might be a fucking lunatic, but you are more likely to believe them because we have an implicit bias towards believing the negative. The brain can only process one message at a time. That's all we're capable of, believe it or not. Only one message at a time. And given the presence of positive and negative messages, guess what the brain will choose each and every time? Negative. Finally, there is what's known as information bias, which is that given the presence of one small defect in an otherwise pristine event, circumstance, experience, or object, we will fixate on the single flaw. If you have one of these iPhones, an iPhone is an amazing thing, as is any smartphone. It's a fucking camera. I'm fucking taping my talk right now with this thing. It's an alarm fucking clock. I have 17 fucking gadgets I don't need anymore because of this damn thing. But if I get a little scratch on it, guess what I'm going to be fixating on for the rest of the time I look at it? That's the first thing I'll look at. The human mind looks for flaws. There was a funny story by Ajahn Brahm in his book. He talks about building this massive wall, huge wall by himself for his Sangha. And when he finished it, he was just caught up in remorse. And his fellow monks asked him what was wrong, and he said, can't you see it? Those two bricks on the very top left in the far corner up there, they're misaligned. And the other monk said, I don't see it now. But it ruined the wall for him. He said he visualized literally taking down the entire wall because of those two bricks. We look for the bad news, the negative, the flaws, the things that don't go well, because the brain has a negativity bias. It likes to store these things, and when we store negative experiences, they're more likely to become implicit triggers that will bring up bad moods in the future. Now, fortunately, given all this information, you might think, well, why the fuck, Josh, should I get out of bed in the fucking morning? This is one long, sustained bummer of a talk. In fact, there's a lot of good news. Neurally, you can reprogram your mind. You can actually change stored negativity biases. You can actually implant positive associations. You can actually stop negative experiences from becoming future triggers. You can do all of these things and more. All of these things have been established clinically. There are vast now studies of the role that mindfulness plays in stopping people from having negative ideation. The key, the first two keys, and I can't emphasize these enough, I'm going to talk about the tools and the practices, but the first two keys are really the most important, which is don't wait until you're in a state of depression, anxiety, you're bummed out, you're caught up in an obsessive loop, you're worried, you're frantically in a bad place. Because by that point, you'll be in a hyper-triggered state. Well, no matter how much you try to practice, your brain is already caught in a loop of just triggering. And these states can be very, very difficult to get out of. You want to practice wherever you are right now in your life. You don't want to wait till you're in a place of isolation and despair. Because the practice of simply steadying the mind, of having a daily meditation practice, or any practice that allows you to keep the mind focused and more still, this will begin to overcome, first of all, the implicit negativity bias, because the longer you can focus the mind, the more you can take in balanced experiences. The negative ones, if we don't grab them and catch them immediately, they'll be implanted. But the positive ones take 20 seconds of sustained holding in your mind before they become hard-ridden. So to literally rebalance the mind with positive associations, positive experiences, things that you want to be able to recall when you're in a state of depression, it takes a still, stable mind to do that. Just saying to yourself, oh, I really would like to remember this, won't do anything. We also want to develop what's known as mindful awareness of the body throughout life. If you find yourself being triggered, you're in a situation where you feel the breath is beginning to get really shallow, you're beginning to, the jaw's locking, you're beginning to feel a sense of panic, anxiety, a sense of a bad mood overwhelming you, before it turns into a fully fledged state, the Buddha showed that we have an opportunity to stop the arising of fully fledged depressive states, ideations that are negative and all that. What we do is catch it in the body, focus, allow the physicality to express itself, but stop the whole thinking process from the associations from forming, the thoughts of, oh no, what the fuck's going on, this sucks, the whole storyline we tell. We interrupt and we just stay with the body and we relax it and we soften. It's actually been shown that if we remain calm during our triggers, we can actually turn what used to be a trigger into something that doesn't trigger us anymore. For example, suppose you have a fear of heights. The answer is not to force yourself to run right up to the edge of a very tall building. That'll re-traumatize you. It's not going to have any use whatsoever. But if one day you go up to the top floor in the elevator and you stick one foot out and you relax, breathe softly, slowly, soften the body, stay with the body, don't go into the thoughts of, oh no, what the fuck am I doing, I'm not going to be able to do this, just stay breathing in a deep way that triggers the vagus nerve, which will release serotonin, you will be able to de-trigger the extreme fear eventually. I tried this myself. I used to have a paralyzing fear of flying, which I no longer do, just by slowly working with these practices over the course of years, I can now do it. But it always started by noticing the panic, noticing the fear, the anxiety, the depression, when it was germinating in the body and catching it before it turned into all the thoughts. Now, if I'm only aware of my moods and the states of being that I'm in by my thoughts, then it's too late. Then what happens is we just argue with the thoughts, and that doesn't work. Because by that point, you've already begun to trigger all the negative memories. You've already created fully the entire body, breath, mood, and all the negative is being triggered. So we've got to catch it early. One of the key tools that will allow us to get out of negative states that we tend to fall into is the practice of mudita, which the Buddha means skillful appreciation. No matter how fucked up life is at any moment, it's only in a couple of areas of your life. There's always one area that's going fine that we don't notice. We might have just gone through a breakup or been fired. The boss said something horrible. Maybe people don't like our paintings. I don't know why I said that, but anyway, nobody likes your paintings. Your song, nobody likes that song that you thought was a hit. You feel like you're broken, you can't get into a good relationship, you can't find the job you want, you're stuck trying to write the great American novel. And we tend to focus on the negative, the struggles, the areas that we feel completely stuck and conflicted. And mudita is the active process of looking around and locating things that are going well. The most common practice of mudita is enjoying the happiness of others when we are not feeling particularly happy. As the Dalai Lama himself said, if we allow ourselves to be buoyed by the happiness of others, we make the chances of our happiness grow by 6 billion, because that's how many fucking other people there are on the planet. If we could only be happy with good news when it happens to us, we reduce our chances for happiness by 6 billion. Whenever I'm in a negative place, I make this a real practice of sitting, holding an image of something that I feel good about in my mind for a while. It's not thinking about it, because thinking doesn't implicitly plant the memories. It's holding it and feeling good and just holding that physical state of ease when I think about a time I was generous, or the time when somebody showed up for me, or the time when I something was beautiful that I was able to experience, and I just hold the perception. The Buddha made a big deal also about doing this with pleasant memories. When we are feeling alone and disconnected, bringing up memories of times where we felt connected, and just hold the feeling in the body, sustain it. Just holding that is more likely to disconnect and disrupt the associative practice of mood congruence, where you're just bringing up one thought after another about being isolated and alone and not connected. If you can hold the feeling of being connected, of having somebody close to you, and you hold that feeling, that fullness in the chest, that softness in the jaw, that softness in the eyes, that feeling of being deeply friendly or in love with someone, you hold that, you can stop the mood congruence. It takes a lot of effort. None of this happens naturally. The mind's natural tendency is to push us into a place of fear, anxiety, nervousness. Why? Because that's what keeps you fucking alive. Nobody ever increased their chances of lasting survival by being happy and peaceful. what we're doing is not really, when we're trying to cultivate peace, we're not doing something that would have helped us during the time when we were hunter-gatherers. What we're doing is something that will help us now. Another practice is what the Buddha called Tadaramana. He never used an easy word. What is it? Tadaramana. That literally means savoring. There's a difference between savoring and craving. If I can't be happy unless I have an iced coffee every morning, and I can't, that's attachment. I have attachment. I'm attached to my iced coffee in the morning. When I don't have my iced coffee, it disrupts me. I have an attachment there. I'm not enlightened. I like my fucking iced coffee in the morning. So, savoring is enjoying something while it lasts, knowing that it's not going to last forever, that it might not always be there. You can savor a sunset. If you attach to a sunset, you're stupid. Because it's going to fucking go away. But you can savor it. What does that mean? Enjoy it. Sit with it. Ponder being with it. Literally feel what it's like to be in its presence. Savor means, especially though, to do something slowly, which we normally do quickly. For instance, you've cooked yourself a beautiful dinner, a healthy dinner. You've done something wonderful with tofu. How you've managed it, I don't know, but you have. And if you just sit and just chew through it mindlessly, none of that memory of taking care of yourself, of feeling good about your capabilities, of feeling good about your creativity, of feeling good about just taking the time to do something nice for yourself, none of those experiences will be planted in your mind. But if you do it really slowly, you eat really slowly, you chew really slowly, you hold the food in your mouth for a long time. Well, that's irritating. Time. It will have a greater chance of sticking. Thank you. Another really good practice is during life, when you are in a state of working yourself up, rather than take actions needing to do something, needing to fix life, don't reward that tendency in the mind. Reward the tendency that notices impermanence, which means just being with your life, noticing the discomfort, how it changes, notice what the experience of being in a place that's uncomfortable, relax around it, try to soften around it. If we notice impermanence, if we really take it in deeply, when we're really fucked up, we will know that it will pass. I'm not going to lie to you. When people say to you, it's going to be okay, they have no right to say that because they haven't a fucking clue. They don't know if it's all going to be okay. You could be hit by a bus tomorrow. But you can, you know that it's going to change. Everything will change. Part of what creates suffering and what creates the process of deep association is the feeling of being either stuck or being trapped or being in a situation where we have to act immediately. So if we can instead implant the ability to simply observe how everything is changing on its own, and very often things resolve on their own, then we plant that ability in the mind. As we, as neuroscientists say, neurons that fire together wire together. The more you give focus to any perception or practice, the more likely it is to recur again and again and again in your life. So think of each situation as a practice ground for the rest of your life. And what you want to be able to practice with is developing patience, not needing to act, allowing life to resolve where possible on its own. We tend to have a bias towards negativity and immediately needing to fix and make decisions, often without enough information. So it's really useful to plant this, the skills that will be useful for the rest of our lives. So to sum up, the mind does not accurately reflect the world around us. The mind focuses on the stuff that it thinks is important for our survival. We each live in a very subjective, skewed, filtered experience, and we tend to remember the negatives. And those negatives can very often turn into what's known as associative triggers, which will prime us to be in even more bad moods. Mood swings, mood plummets, mood spirals, whatever you want to call it. If we want to rebalance the mind, we've got to train the mind to be able to pause longer, focus longer, stay present with things that we want to savor. We've got to catch the dark moods when they germinate in the body and stop the process before it turns into the thoughts that really create the mood congruent spirals. We want to be able to do things slower that we enjoy so that we really deeply neurally encode them. We want to really bring a loving attention to all the things that bring us peace so that we'll be more likely to recall them in the future when we really need to remember that we're loved, connected, and a part of something. So I thank you for listening. I hope there was something worthwhile in there. If you're going to leave now, I hope you can remember to contribute, because it's always a struggle to make the rent.